on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't tell my team that I'm so lucky to have come from a legal background before doing this job. And that is true. And you can actually talk to every member of my team, and I say it on a continuous basis. When it comes to raising investment, I know the corporate structures that you could have. I know how to negotiate the deal terms because I was, you know, I was a lawyer on that type of side of the of law. When it comes to banking and banking transactions and opening bank accounts, and because again, I was on the financial services and regulation, and my network is really helpful. When it comes to talking to customers and what needs they have, absolutely, I understand it because I was them. When it comes to HR procedures, I mean, literally anything, and commercial structures and commercial agreements and all of that, every single thing that I've done in my career before this job has prepared me for it and has been really good ammunition.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing how and why we should encourage the transition from legal professionals to legal tech professionals. And for this, I'm joined by Sally Sverteit. Now, Sally is the CEO of Regulation, a knowledge tech company helping to unlock intelligence by reimagining the way in which organizations across the globe access data. She's also served as a general counsel, head of compliance, partner at a global law firm, and a regulator. She has a unique perspective on the interconnected worlds of regulation and technology, and she's also worked at the core ideas that underpin the operational infrastructure of the new economy. Sally, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's nice chatting with you.
Now, I just already mentioned that you have had quite a number of activities going on throughout your career. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about your professional background, focusing on where you started to where you are now?
All right. So I was a lawyer up until 2018. But I was a lawyer on different sides of the ecosystem fence, let's call it that. So when I first graduated, you do your training contract. So that's the norm. You explore different areas. Again, nothing that's different. Then I decided to go in-house. Which I did, and I started specializing a little bit at that time. So I went in-house, and when you first go in-house, everybody tells you, oh, it's going to be very difficult for you to get back into a law firm, but I took that risk and I did it. After that, I went back into private practice for a little bit, again, as an associate, to then move back in-house. So the common factor with my career was the moving between in-house and law firm. And then for a brief period of time also, I was a regulator and a government advisor. The funny thing is, when I was general counsel, people told me, oh, that's it, you're going to be general counsel forever. I actually took a partner role after that. Then when I was a partner, everybody was like, that's it, you're going to be a partner forever. And I actually started a tech company. So I guess...
Quite a transition.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was an associate, everybody said, no, you must stay within a law firm so that you can then be a partner. And I was like, no, I'm just going to follow my curiosity. And I did. And then I made partner, even though I was a general counsel before and I hadn't been in-house for a number of years. So... I guess maybe I was embracing uncertainty from a very young age. So that's been my career so far. But that's also because I was following my curiosity and what worked for me rather than a career path. I never believed in living the life of somebody else. It was always going to be the most fulfilling life for me. So that's really why I was doing it.
Yeah, no, that's really, really interesting. And you just also said, you know, like people in your surrounding in the professional scene would like tell you, you know, this is it, this is, and then with the next role, you know, this is it. Do you think that's holding other people back from doing the same?
Definitely. I think there's a lot of, you have to go back to people. We are generally afraid of making mistakes. That's part of self-preservation. But in today's world, actually, we need to make mistakes so that we can learn and grow. And that's something that you have to train yourself to do. And even at the school, at the stage of school, people are not being trained or given enough space to make mistakes, because you've got exams, you've got to do well in your exams, then you've got to get the good grades to get into the right university, to then get into the right job. And then once you're in your job, you have to do your job as best as you can by making as few mistakes as possible so that you can get that promotion and et cetera, et cetera. So the entire ethos of how we grow up and how we go into the world of work is to not make mistakes. And then compounded is the fact that as lawyers, we're taught, and everything that we do is to look at risks and to then try to address those risks and mitigate them and advise our clients about those risks and what to do about them. And so we're taught to always look for what will go wrong. And because we're taught to always look for what will go wrong, a leap of faith becomes a massive leap. And that holds people back.
What's this whole experience been like for you in starting a tech startup? I mean, the jobs that you had, I can imagine that people would, you know, do anything to really get to those positions as a regulator, you know, a partner at a law firm. That's really quite something. How have you experienced this transition?
First of all, you don't know that you're an entrepreneur until you know that you're an entrepreneur. So I did not know that I was an entrepreneur until I discovered that. So looking back on my career, because it is very much looking back that you can identify it, every job that had ever attracted me was one where it was virgin territory. So, for example, I went into one of the biggest banks in the United Arab Emirates, but actually it was a bank in the United Arab Emirates, so it's not the size of an HSBC or a Standard Chartered. And that was a controversial career move by me. But the reason that I made that career move was because at the time, the general counsel made me an offer that to me, I couldn't refuse, which was come in to the bank and you can do any role that you like and be involved in any area of the bank that you like. And I saw this as a golden opportunity to go in and learn everything that I could learn about banking. So that was really interesting for me. Then going into the regulator was after the financial crisis, and everything had to be redone. So the whole, you know, all of the regulation had to be rewritten so that we could cater for a new kind of systemic risk. And the role that I took at the regulator was again one that was a new role. And when I became a partner, again, it was partner for a sector that law firm didn't have. So there was a continuing theme within my career. Although I was taking roles that were supposedly traditional, but the actual role that I was taking were completely new. And so the transition to being the CEO of a tech company was scary, obviously. So let's not say that it wasn't scary, because it was, because I was leaving behind a really good career. but I was prepared for taking on a new role that was completely uncertain. Let's put it that way. But you can never really be prepared to be the CEO of a tech company. Tech companies are a completely different beast. The level of complexity that you have in a tech company has no equivalent, as far as I can see, so far. Which you would think would attract lawyers, because as lawyers, we're attracted to complexity.
What are some of the maybe skills that you took from your more traditional legal careers into actually building this legal tech startup that you are now the CEO of?
So there isn't a day that goes by that I don't tell my team that I'm so lucky to have come from a legal background before doing this job. And that is true. And you can actually talk to every member of my team, and I say it on a continuous basis. When it comes to raising investment, I know the corporate structures that you could have. I know how to negotiate the deal terms because I was, you know, I was a lawyer on that type of side of the of law. When it comes to banking and banking transactions and opening bank accounts, and because again, I was on the financial services and regulation, and my network is really helpful. When it comes to talking to customers and what needs they have, absolutely, I understand it because I was them. When it comes to HR procedures, I mean, literally anything, anything, and commercial structures and commercial agreements and all of that, every single thing that I've done in my career before this job has prepared me for it and has been really good ammunition.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit more actually about what regulation does? Maybe to provide a little bit of context in that sense.
Sure. And again, setting up regulation was very much a lawyer's approach to doing things. So as a lawyer, you're trained to look for the root of the problem and solve for that problem. My journey down tech was actually more like Alice in Wonderland, Alice going down the rabbit hole, because my customers were digitizing. So this was financial services industry. So they were adopting technology. They were adopting new technologies like blockchain. There was the cryptocurrency movement that was going on. There was even back when I was in house, it was all about derivatives transactions, which are all done through systems and technology. So my journey started when I was a lawyer down technology, and my discovery of the problem also happened while I was a lawyer. And to me, the core of the problem is accessing data. So if you really, let's now take a helicopter view and step up a little bit. What we're actually talking is about changing our economies. This is what is happening at the moment. And this is not just legal tech. Look around you, look at every single industry. Every single industry is being reshaped by technology. Every single industry is being reshaped by a sustainability agenda. And all of these things that are happening actually need data access. Because if you're looking at how am I going to build a more sustainable company, you need to first get access to data to understand what is impacting your company? What are your employees needing? What are your customers telling you? And that goes back down to getting data. And the crux of the problem is that data cannot be accessed because of privacy regulation, because you can't move it from one jurisdiction to another. You can't reveal the personal information of your customers because you're a guarantor of that information. So in my journey in advising customers, I understood that data was a critical component that was never going to be served by me just advising my customers on what they could do and what policies they should put in place. The way I looked at it was, you need technology to support the legal infrastructure of how you protect people and their data. So what we ended up setting up is a company that develops infrastructure to support data access, to support explainability of AI, because we need to understand why AI is making recommendations. So it was, the short answer is, it was like peeling an onion. I started peeling the onion when I was a lawyer, and I discovered after a lot of pain and tears, I discovered that the core of the problem was data. So we developed an infrastructure as a service that would support any sort of data interaction.
Well, that's really interesting. What's the reaction been from, from the side of lawyers, but also from regulators to the company that you've built up and this whole concept that you're building it up on?
Regulators, public policy and regulators in particular, are very welcoming of what we do, because what we do is an infrastructure as a service, which supports the industries that they regulate and the industries that they're supporting to digitize. And it also supports data ethics and AI ethics and all of those movements that they are and those policies that they're already working on. So it's actually been really well received. And in fact, our platform, which is the infrastructure platform that I talked that I've just talked about, is financially supported by Innovate UK, so the UK government. So that's that. And on the legal side, I think there's a misconception that lawyers don't want to innovate. I think they want to innovate, but they want to do it in a responsible way. And just sharing data is never going to happen when you're a lawyer. It just isn't, right? You're responsible for your customers' confidential information. This is your number one principle. So asking them to innovate by using their customers' data when there is a risk of the customers' data being leaked, it was always going to be a non-starter, or it was going to be very difficult. So because we put a solution around that, which allows them to innovate while keeping the information of their customers private and confidential, they are very welcoming. Now, it doesn't mean that they have the skills to be able to work with analytics. That's a separate problem altogether.
Because in terms of, well, of course, it's clear that also when you just spoke about actually building up regulation, you know, the knowledge and skills that you actually learned throughout your more traditional legal careers, they were really useful for starting up this legal tech startup. But to what extent is there a value for, I guess, for lawyers, but for legal professionals in general, to kind of follow, I guess, the same path as that you, or at least an innovative path? What is the value in it for them to actually even start doing that? And then, of course, the whole skill discussion is like something that would follow that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who you're talking about in the legal value chain, right? So let's start with the law firm as an organization. So if you're a law firm as an organization, you're coming under pressure from your customers to adopt technology to better serve them in a way that is more transparent with a fixed price tag. The hourly rate is, I was general counsel. I hated the hourly rate. I can tell you that for a fact, because I could never, ever control my costs based on the hourly rate. So, and a fixed fee doesn't work for the law firm, because again, I was a partner, because you don't really know how long that case or that piece of work is going to take. It's very difficult to say at the outset. So if you think about it, they're in a bit of a catch-22. And a way to get out of that catch-22 is to deliver their services and their advice in a more efficient way through systems. That's the most basic, and e-discovery falls in that category, where I know that as a partner you can make some money off doing the discovery through trainees, but actually your customers will appreciate it much more if you use the e-discovery system first to be able to reduce the workload that the humans will have to go through. So that's a very basic use of legal tech, which I think is the most adopted. If you're an in-house lawyer, exactly what I said before, right? I don't want to pay an hourly rate, and I do want to know exactly how much I'm going to spend. And by the way, I don't want to have to wait for my lawyer to get back to me for 2 or 3 days while they chase the partner that they need to go to talk to. To give me the advice that I wanted. I want to have their advice 24/7 at my fingertips. And also as an in-house, often you end up paying the price of the more expensive law firms just because they give you that 24-hour service, which then exhausts their trainees and their associates. So now let's talk about the more junior lawyers within the law firm. The more junior lawyers within the law firm definitely want better tools. I mean, there is nothing more frustrating than having to chase another associate or chase another partner to get an answer to a legal question that your customer has asked you. That's just ridiculously frustrating. So if they were able to access the know-how of the firm, the specific knowledge through technology tools, that would also be better for them. The question that is usually posed, we usually cushion it in, you know, what's the value of lawyers adopting technology? I would actually put it in the context of upskilling and reskilling. If we don't upskill people to understand the world of digital, they are not going to be able to cope with the future. That's it. It's really that simple. This is about understanding the technology that you are already interacting with on a daily basis. There is so much artificial intelligence in your phone that you do not understand. People do not even understand how their privacy, how their own data is being tracked across different technology platforms. And how are they going to be able to make a decision about which technology tool to adopt at work for their company? And it's actually that lack of knowledge that I think holds people back from making a decision. It's always easier to not make a decision than to make a decision.
No, for sure. And also, you just mentioned, I guess, like this whole theme of upskilling or reskilling. And of course, you can kind of distinguish between each of the different actors within the legal domain, like you kind of just explained. But what are we even talking about when we're talking about upskilling or reskilling? Like what should be upskilled and how should they reskill, basically? What have you envisioned in terms of like this path?
Right. Now, I'm a very practical person. So, you know, when you go to law school, you read about use cases, you read about the theory behind, first of all, you study the principles, the theory behind them, what you want to achieve, and then you do some coursework and some use cases, etc., which brings it a little bit more to life. With technology, you can do that and you can read about use cases, but there is nothing like doing it for yourself. So I'm a firm believer in raising your sleeves, getting yourself involved in some projects that have to do with artificial intelligence or any area that you feel passionate about that is at the intersection of law and technology. And just go and see how it works and understand it, because there are so many layers of complexities which you will never be able to just read in a book unless you do it. So for me, upskilling is, okay, you're doing your work today, which is a contract review. Explore a contract review tool in the specifics of today's job and see how it does it better or worse, and understand why it does it better or worse.
And in terms of I guess, reskilling, what are some of the things that legal professionals, and in this case, particular lawyers, what are some of the skills that they really would need to start learning, which they would never otherwise have access to in any other way?
It could be something as simple as tagging and starting to tag a document for a machine to read that document. Again, you see the theme, which is practical. Just do something practical. That's it. And you wouldn't be the tagging for the you wouldn't be doing the tagging for the tagging's sake, because it's not a fun thing to do. But you'd be doing the tagging because it means that you would understand how a machine needs to read information so that it can learn, and that would start your. It's like following. Alice down the rabbit hole. It's like following your curiosity by starting at an entry point which is really digestible and starting to learn from there. Same as you would learn anything, right? You start from the basics and then you learn and you learn and you learn. But to me, there's going to be so many analytical, and by analytical, I mean AI, machine learning, but there's going to be so many analytics tools out there. I think lawyers need to understand how those analytics tools work so that they can decide which ones are good enough, which ones are not, and also think about which ones they need that don't exist today. And also, if you're a partner at a law firm, to actually understand the risks that your law firm is under, like which areas of your business is going to be disrupted, which area is not going to be disrupted.
Yeah, because like when we started discussing even the topic of this podcast, one of the things that you mentioned is that you're really a big proponent of encouraging legal professionals in the traditional sense kind of move towards a legal tech career. Do you think it's a responsibility that, for instance, law firms even have actually something that goes as far as a responsibility to give their employees or the lawyers that work in the firm the opportunity to move towards such a career?
If I had my own law firm, I would say yes. but obviously, I'm going to say yes. but there is a reason why I would say yes. If I'm looking towards the viability of my business as a business, I do need to look at the risks and opportunities that that business has, and people, capital. There's a reason why we call them capital, is because your people are really the number one factor in your company succeeding or failing. And if your people are not able to adapt to the new world that is forming around them, then your company is at risk. So I'd say you definitely have to have a program in place to upskill and reskill your people without it being completely disruptive and cannibalizing your existing business model, but at least so that you have a workforce that's prepared for the future to seize the opportunities of the future and address the risks of the present and the future.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think you're right in terms of like the sizes, of course. That's something we should definitely also take into account when thinking about this. Now, in terms of actually the legal tech industry itself, you have a legal tech company. How big is this market, or how much room is there for new professionals to kind of make this transition, actually go into the hardcore legal tech environment, be it as an entrepreneur or as somebody just wanting to join a legal tech company?
Okay, let's look at the whole legal tech ecosystem. So, if the legal tech ecosystem, to us, I'm going to define it according to our definition. You have data holders, so these are the people who have data. And then you have the data users, and these are the people who need to use the data to create legal tech solutions. In the bucket of a data holder, you could have a law firm, for example, or you could have a company with its in-house team because they have data. In the bucket of the data users, you have the AI companies, so the legal tech companies who need to use that data. But equally, you could have the in-house department of that company that also wants to develop new legal tech products. In that case, they are a data user. Or you could have somebody, an innovation department within the law firm that also wants to use data to develop new products. So they're also a data user. So we look at the whole ecosystem as they need each other, right? It is an ecosystem and everybody needs each other. So if I look at the data holder side, they actually need technology solutions so that they can use their data better to develop products. And that's one of the reasons why we developed the AIR platform, so that they can use their data without risking data leakage. And by making it easier also through tools. On the legal user, on the data user side, they actually need to connect to that data, and there's a lot of engineering capabilities out there. They need data science teams, and there's a lot of that around. But what is absolutely missing for everybody across the board is legal product managers. Somebody who understands the law and the tech. If I were to put a call out there for individuals that are relatively senior, that understand law and understand tech, or just understand law and have an interest in tech, I would say that is a career that is very much in demand.
Now, maybe moving towards a bit more of the wrap up of this episode, and also looking towards the future, what is some advice or some final advice that you would want to give everyone in the industry, be it young, old, established or not, looking to make this transition, like to follow a similar path like you did?
I think there's lots of communities that you can reach out to. We publish regularly. If people follow us on LinkedIn, we have a roundup where we publish a lot of the things that are happening in the sector that people can follow. So start by reading, start by informing yourself, and reach out. We're always happy to talk to people, and there are others as well. I mean, the legal tech community is not very big, so you can very quickly wrap your arms around it and know who's who. I mean, we're putting a call out for ecosystem for anybody who wants to. It's a data access ecosystem that we're launching for anybody who wants to, who has a problem in legal tech that they want to solve, an idea for a solution, whether they need data, whether they need data scientists, whatever it is, to just reach out to us and we'll put them in touch with the right people. So we're very happy to help on that front. Of things that people can do without reaching out is really to read. I would very much take myself out of the legal tech perspective to begin with. I mean, so when I study something, and again, maybe it's the lawyer in me, but whenever I'm looking at a new area that I don't understand, I look for the trunk of the tree. And I, because once you understand the trunk, the drivers of anything, and the founding and the foundational principles of anything, the rest is just the leaves and the branches, and they're easy to figure out. So what I would say is try to understand legal tech is not just legal tech because we're going to be disrupted. And legal tech is not, it's not where the disruption is happening, really. The disruption is happening everywhere else around legal tech, in every single industry. There is a reason why we talk about the fourth industrial revolution. And I would encourage people to read, I think the WEF publishes some really good material there, to understand that this is something that isn't just situational. It is actually happening. And it's not legal is not immune, just like any other profession is not immune. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to use, don't go to the extreme. Don't think that we're not going to need lawyers anymore and people, because that is absolutely not true. There is no way that AI will replace people. It just won't.
I think that could be like a whole topic for a podcast in itself. I want to thank you very much for sharing your insights with us, and also giving us a bit more of a thought, actually, to to move from being merely traditional legal professionals, kind of adopting and embracing technology, looking towards the future. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It was really talking to you, and thank you for the opportunity. I hope there are people out there who do benefit from hearing my ramblings.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast. Yeah.